Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of The Love Journey.
When I think of home, I think of a resting place. A place where there's peace, quiet, and serenity. And that's where some of my friends have gone. Friends who have traveled with me through my wonderful experience in Oz. A journey I'll never forget. When I think of home, I think of a place where there's love alone. I wish I was home, I wish I was back there with the things I've been knowing. When that makes the tall grass bend and to lean, suddenly the raindrops that fall, they have a meaning, sprinkling the sea, makes it all. Now that I have some direction.
Good morning. Welcome to the start of the Love Journey, Your Love Experience with Janine and Ingram. I am your daily lover, and we're going to get ready and turn with the end, recognizing that there is only one power, one presence. And on this line, we recognize this grace spirit that is known by many names as God, the good, the omnipotent, everywhere present, knowing that there is not a spot that our God is not. And as we become intentional about the breath, I want us to take in a deep breath, breathing in through the nose, hold it to the point of vibration, and hold it to the count of eight, and then releasing the breath, recognizing that God is all there is. So let's together, let's prepare our minds and hearts, still and be very intentional about the breath. And together, be still and know that I am God. Breathe. And know that I am God. Let's breathe, family. Release. And last time, breathe, family. Be still. Know that I am God. Breathe. And release.
Day 1, a prayer of forgiveness. Today, I forgive myself. Precious and beloved God, my source and my creator, today I ask for and open myself to receive the strength, courage, and compassion required to forgive myself. I forgive myself for all perceived sins, faults, mistakes, and failings. I forgive myself for every thought, belief, behavior, perception, and emotion that I have told myself is bad, wrong, unjust, unloving, and displeasing to you, God. I forgive myself for every hurt, judgment, condemnation, unkind or unloving thought, belief, and perception I have held about myself or against myself. I forgive myself for any behaviors, habits, or actions motivated by unforgiveness or the unwillingness to forgive myself. I forgive myself with compassion and love. I ask for, accept, and claim God's forgiveness today, believing and knowing that because I have asked, I have received. I am so grateful. I let it be, and so it is. Today, I forgive myself.
Amen. I forgive myself. Thank you, God. And so it is. We're going to move right into the science of the mind. Today's science of the mind is mental chemistry. Mental chemistry. Adaptability is the key. In the book, in The Science of Mind on page 143, it says, we have the right to choose what we wish to experience. We have the right to choose what we wish to experience. The earlier 20th century experiments with parasites on plants found that when infested rose bushes were brought into a room and placed in front of a closed window and allowed to dry out, the parasites, previously wingless, changed to winged insects after the metamorphosis. The insects left the plants, flew to the window, and then crept upwards on the glass towards slight cracks in the window frame. They were unable to secure anything more to eat or drink from this now dead source. The insects found that the only method by which they could save themselves from starvation was to grow temporary wings and fly. You see, the parasites desired change and their molecular structure through mental chemistry. Wow. The parasites desired change and the molecular structure, chemistry. See, mental chemistry was a term popularized by spiritual author Charles Hunnell, who defined it as the science of undergoing the changing of conditions through the operation of the mind. You see, Charles indicated that even the lowest order of life make use of mental chemistry. As sentient beings, we are certainly far from the lowest order of life. Yet our ability to use this activity of the mind to resist and disavow the ability to undergo metamorphosis is self-contradictory. It's use of mental chemistry that keeps us aligned with the infinite. It's the portal we pass through to an option or a possibility that previously seemed non-existent. You see, the world becomes our laboratory, and we, as mental scientists, meet the apparent absence of a desired source with alchemical thinking. Thus, through right use of mind, we reveal solutions that await recognition. The paradox is that this innate ability goes unused by many. Without a willingness to change the chemistries of one mental habit, we metaphorically cling to dead things. Wow. The paradox is that this innate ability goes unused by many of us. Without a change to the chemistry of one's mental habit, we metaphorically cling to death, moaning the fact that we are starving. Changing our thinking allows our wings of solution to grow and carry us toward illumined thinking. Changing our thinking allows our wings to a solution to grow and carry us toward illuminated thinking. I allow discernment and wisdom to lead me to my next great expression. That's the affirmation for today. I allow my discernment and wisdom to lead me to great expression, to my next great expression. I want you to marinate on that. I allow my wisdom to lead me to my next great expression. I allow discernment and wisdom to lead me to my next great expression. Wow. And as sentient beings, that's what it says. Sentient, we are certainly far from the lowest order of life. And sentient means feeling, able to feel or perceive or feel things. We are sentient beings. And sentient comes from a Latin verb, sentire, which means to feel, feeling or a sense. We are beings that feel, that sense things. I love words. I love words. I love words. I truly love words. I'm so grateful for vocabulary. And today what I want us to hear is this. You know, sometimes I wonder when I look out at this big picture window and I look out into the vast universe of life. As today I prepare to celebrate the life of Rosh Hashanah tomorrow, and I think to myself, wow, why does death have to teach us to live? Why does death have to remind us the importance of love? Why isn't it not just a natural default? You know, it's like death stops you in your track and say, oh, I haven't been paying attention. I've been so busy working and in the struggle and in the process that I'm not present. And so when I heard this, trust the struggle, I thought it was interesting. It's a TED Talk. And her name is Zane Asner. And I wonder, everything is divine. No matter where we are in this process, even if we're all that time, y'all couldn't even hear me.
Hello, everyone. My name is Zane Asher, and I'm an anchor at CNN International. I'm super proud to say that I have my dream job. I wake up every day, and I am so excited to go to work. But my life wasn't always this way, and I do want to share a little bit about my background to help hopefully motivate and inspire some of you. So I'm an anchor at CNN International now, but about four and a half years ago, I was working as a receptionist. And the reason why I share that is because I want to let you know that success is never really in a straight line. There's always going to be bumps along the way. So for the longest time in my life, I always believed that hard work was the key to success. I thought, you know what, if you work hard, of course you're going to be successful. But now I realize that there is so much more to the story. There are plenty of people who work hard who don't necessarily make it in their chosen careers. There are plenty of people who are extraordinarily talented, who know the right people, who are well-educated, who don't necessarily make it. So if it's not always hard work, then what then determines whether you're going to be successful? As I attempt to answer this, I want to share with you a little bit about my life and my background. I was born and raised here in London. My family and I were originally from Nigeria. The worst and probably most difficult day in my life was September 3rd, 1988. I was about 5 years old. And my mother and I were in the kitchen in our house in London. We'd just gotten back from a wedding in Nigeria. And my brother and my father were still in Nigeria a few days after the wedding for a road trip, father and son road trip. And they were supposed to come home on September 3rd, 1988. So we were supposed to pick them up from the airport. And we were waiting and waiting, and I guess we assumed that they had missed their flight. We continued to wait. We didn't hear anything. And then later on that day, my mother got a phone call from a family friend in Nigeria, and the voice on the other end of the line just basically said, you know, your husband and your son have been involved in a car crash. One of them is dead, and we don't know which one. So the car crash happened in Nigeria, and there was about five people in the car. Everyone in the car died instantly, apart from one person in the back seat where my father and my brother were sitting. It turned out to be my father who died. My mother was pregnant at the time. Of course, she was devastated because my parents were really the loves of each other's lives. So I was raised in a single parent family. For a while, my mother sent me to live in Nigeria by myself with my grandmother. And when I came back, she decided that, you know, in life, if you want to be successful, you have to be able to relate to people from all walks of life. So she deliberately sent me to various types of schools. I went to school in Nigeria. I went to a state school in a poor neighborhood in South London. I went to a private school, and then I went to a boarding school. And this was on purpose, deliberately, because my mother felt that if you want to make it in life, you need to be able to relate to everybody. So when I was 16, I have a strict Nigerian mother, but when I was 16, she decided that she wanted me to go to Oxford. And she sat down and she thought, okay, how can I guarantee that my child is going to get into Oxford? What can I do to make that happen? And she thought about it for a few days, and she came up to me with a proposal, and she said that she was going to ban me from watching any television for 18 months. So I was only allowed to watch BBC and CNN International. If I wanted to watch anything else, I had to ask special permission for that. And then no television expanded into no phone, no cable, no music. I literally had nothing else to do but study. And my mother said to me, the only way, if you're living in my house, the only way you're ever going to be able to watch television again is if you get into Oxford. So, I mean, we laugh now and it is funny, but, you know, her plan worked. I worked very hard. I got straight A's and then I went to Oxford. So overall, I didn't necessarily have the easiest childhood. I was raised in a single-parent family. We didn't have much money. I changed schools constantly, therefore found it difficult to make friends. So I didn't have the easiest childhood, but I loved every minute of it because it prepared me for real life. As I mentioned, especially after having gone to Oxford, and I went to grad school as well in New York, Columbia, I really believed up until that point that hard work was the key to being successful. And now I realize there's a lot more to the story. I'm going to share with you what I think is more to the story. The first thing I believe is trust your struggle. This is something I'd heard a lot. Trust your struggle. And that means no matter what the hardships are you're going through in life, have faith that it will all end up being for the greater good. So I mentioned that four and a half years ago, I was working as a receptionist, and I was in a production company in California. And I was a receptionist, so I really wanted to sort of move up within the company. And no matter how hard I worked, I couldn't get promoted. No matter how many times I stayed late or came in on the weekends, hoping that my boss would notice me and promote me, it never happened. And in fact, for the position I wanted, they began looking for external candidates. I'm sure anyone who's been through that knows how that can be. And because I was a receptionist, it was my job to serve water to the people who were coming in to interview for the job that I wanted. I know. It wasn't easy. And so I didn't really necessarily feel good about myself because of that, and I did some soul searching, and I asked myself, okay, well, what do you really want to do in life? Because clearly this is probably not meant for you. What do you really want to do? And I'd always been passionate about broadcast journalism. So I called a television station in New York, a local news station, and I asked them, what do I need to do to get a job with you guys? So unfortunately, I didn't have any experience. They needed about 2 or 3 years previous experience as a reporter, and the only experience I really had was answering phones and sending faxes. That's all I really knew how to do. And so they said no repeatedly to me, and on top of that, I had a British accent. And in America, if you want to get into the local news business, it's very difficult if you have a foreign accent. It's a lot easier in national news, but certainly in local news, it's a lot harder. So they said no, and I decided I wasn't going to take no for an answer, so I basically called in sick to work, and I paid my roommate, my housemate, a few hundred dollars or whatever, and they helped me, film me around Los Angeles, sort of acting like a reporter. I studied reporters inside out. I studied everything that they did inside out, and I put together various packages, which is sort of voiced over pieces that I learned basically from studying various reporters, and I sent it to this news station, hoping that they would give me a chance. Unfortunately, a lot of these news stations received thousands of applications, thousands of tapes, so it took them several months to get back to me. And during that time, the recession kicked in, and I lost my job. So there I was, no money, no job. So I decided anyway that I was going to move to New York and just hope that this one station would get back to me. So eventually, after emailing and pestering constantly, they eventually got back to me. They brought me in for an interview, and they were so impressed that even though I had no experience, that I'd put together this tape by myself showing what I could do, that they hired me on the spot. So, thank you. So that's why I say trust your struggle. The second thing I believe, and this sort of comes out of left field, is I honestly do not believe in competition. The corporate world will tell you that if you want to get ahead in life, you need to be competitive. You need to have that drive to succeed and compete with one another. But I don't believe in competing for what I want. I believe in creating what I want. Abraham Lincoln once said that the best way to predict the future is to create it. In order for me to be successful, I don't believe that I need to take anything away from anyone else. Now, of course, you know, there are some advantages to looking at your peers for inspiration, definitely. But I think that having a competitive spirit, having that need for one-upmanship, and comparing yourself to other people again and again can actually bring out fears and insecurities that end up holding you back. So when I was interviewing for another position in CNN, the anchor job, I was sort of sat next to a girl who I was competing for the same job with. And rather than sort of not wish her well, I sat with her for hours and I helped her. I showed her what she could improve upon so she had just as good a chance of getting the job as I did. I went in for the screen test first. I came out and I told her everything they asked me and how she should prepare. So I don't believe in competition. I believe in creating what I want. I don't believe in competing for what's already been created. The third thing I honestly believe is to give, because it has become abundantly clear to me in life that the more you give, the more you receive. I learned this lesson from a woman named Kat Cole, who I interviewed for a story for CNN. She's a corporate CEO, and she started her career as a waitress at Hooters. Now, I don't know, I'm not sure, you guys laugh, but I'm not sure if people know what Hooters, I don't know if you have Hooters in England, but it's a restaurant chain in America where the waitresses are very scantily clad. And that's how she started off. And I was curious about the transition from going from that kind of environment, especially because she grew up poor and her mother saved $10 a week for food, to now being a CEO. And especially financially, I wanted to know what that was like for her. So she said she didn't really know what it felt like to have money, even though she was being well paid, because she still gives most of her money away to this day, because it was clear to her that the more you give in life, the more you receive. So this had a pretty deep impact on me, because I've interviewed a lot of CEOs for CNN, and I've interviewed a lot of founders for tech startups, some of whom have made millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars. And usually what they say is, you want to be successful, you need to network, you've got to have a brand, you've got to study your competition. And she had some practical advice as well, but certainly the moral of her story was that the more you give, the more you receive. And I can tell you that I've tried it, I've tested it, and I don't necessarily believe in giving just to receive, but she is right. The more you give, the more you receive. And the last thing I'm going to say, it is loosely related to hard work. And when I first heard this phrase, I thought it was such a cliche. I'd heard it so many times growing up. And that is, success comes when opportunity meets preparation. I'd heard that so many times, I thought it was a cliche. I never really paid attention to it. Only now do I realize how true that really is. I'll give you an example. So when I was in local news in New York, I really wanted to work my way up to get into national news. I'd always wanted to work for CNN since I was a teenager. And I realized, after studying different reporters and how they made it, I realized that it was crucial for me to have a specialty, some sort of expertise, something that I could do better than others, I guess. And so that could be anything from being a sports reporter to being a political reporter or a business reporter. And I was very passionate about business news. So while I was working in local news, I decided to study and teach myself business news, not necessarily because there was an opportunity coming my way or there was an interview that I was preparing for, but because I trusted that one day an opportunity would come and I needed to be ready. So every weekend, I went to the library. One weekend, I'd study stocks. The next weekend, I'd study bonds. The next weekend, derivatives. The next weekend, mergers and acquisitions, teaching myself. And in fact, the librarians on 33rd and Madison in New York got to know me very well, because oftentimes I'd be the last person to leave. So after doing that for a few years, eventually by pure chance, I happened to meet an executive at CNN. And I asked him which department he worked in. He said he ran the business news unit and he was looking for a reporter. So when I met him, he gave me about 2 weeks to come in for a screen test and also for a financial news test as well. So in his mind, he felt guilty because he only had given me 2 weeks to prepare. But in my mind, I knew in my heart that I had been preparing for years. So this is a lesson as well that I'd learnt from my older brother. Some of you have already approached me about him, but my older brother is an actor, he starred in a movie that came out this time last year called 12 Years a Slave. He was nominated for an Oscar for Best Actor, and I'd learned this lesson from him. He is a master preparer. When he was 13 years old, he would lock himself in his room and write Shakespeare on the walls, and he would study and memorize various plays from Measure for Measure, Twelfth Night, Richard III, not because he had an audition coming up, but just in case, in a few years, an audition came his way, he wanted to be ready. It didn't matter how many times he had to do it. He did it again and again and again until he got it right. Most people wait until they get the call for a job interview before they begin to prepare, or they wait until they get the call for an audition before they begin to rehearse. But my brother taught me to prepare well before you get that call. So to sum up, I truly believe in trusting your struggle, knowing that the hardships you go through will somehow end up being for your own benefit. I also believe in turning a blind eye to competition. I believe in giving, and I believe in trusting and knowing that your opportunity will one day come. You just have to be ready. Thank you.
Wow, trust your struggle. Trust your struggle. I love that. And I wanted to share that because I was thinking about embracing it and trusting our struggle. But when we think about embracing and trusting the struggle, it doesn't mean we should enjoy struggle. It means to learn from the struggle, to allow. So often we don't learn from what we're going through, nor do we take the time to enjoy what we have because we're too busy hoping for what we don't have. Let me say that again. So often we don't learn from what we're going through, nor do we take the time to enjoy what we have because we're too busy looking at what we don't have. And I want you to just breathe that in. Wonder why our default process is always to look at what we don't have and not to enjoy and embrace what we do have. At every moment of our lives, we are ignoring the present and always longing for a better future, not realizing that we are draining the power from the present moment. Picture the journey to success is climbing a mountain. And when you think about it, you realize that all the lessons are in the climb. It's in the climb where your best friends are made. It's in the climb where your strength is built and your character is formed. It's in the climb where you must appreciate every step you take, no matter how small the surface, you appreciate that you're on solid ground. So as you are longing for a better future, wherever it may be, don't forget to value the climb. Learn the lessons life is trying to teach us, both the bitter and the sweet. Allow each obstacle to build the strength and the character because it's in the moments of adversity when that will be revealed. Learn how to be hungry for more, but also content with what you already have. This is the point to your life when you find complete balance and pure happiness. Let's say that again. So as we are longing for a better future, whatever it may be, don't forget to value the climb. Learn the lessons life is trying to teach you, both the bitter and the sweet. Allow each obstacle to build the strength and the character because it's in the moments of adversity when that will be revealed. Learn how to be hungry for more, but also content with what we already have. You see, this is the point in life when we find complete balance and happiness. So many times, I think about the time when the first time I climbed the mountain was with Diamond and Tim in North Carolina. I think it was called Crowder Mountain. And we all started out at the same level. And the higher you go on the mountain, I think it was like 8,000 feet, something, 9, 10. I climbed the mountain. This is my first time. And I remember thinking to myself as I was climbing, and at some point I started to get slower because the higher you get on the mountain, the thinner the air, the more you have to adjust your breathing. And for those who are used to climbing mountains, it was just a matter of just keep moving. They knew what they were doing. I would often have to stop and breathe and breathe and relax so that I can make it through. And so in one of the rest spots, Diamond and I was talking. She said, "Ma, you're so busy trying to get to the top that you're not enjoying the process." Wow. She said, "You're not being present because you're so busy wanting to make it to the top." She said, "And the struggle to get to the top, once we get there, it's only 5 minutes long and then we back down." She said, it's in the process. And I was like, wow, it's funny how your children become your teachers, your parenting, your everything, you know. And I'm going, wow, that's so true. I am so caught up in the idea of getting to the top that I'm not present to what's around me and just enjoying the process. And I started to relate a lot of the elements that happened. We all started out at the same level at the bottom, and we all started climbing the mountain, and some made it to the top faster, some was behind me. But at some point, there was this point of isolation where it felt like nobody was there. And I started thinking about what's the gift of isolation? The gift of isolation. And the Spirit said it's the preparation for the destination. So the gift of isolation is the preparation for the destination. I think about Moses being in isolation and in preparation for 40 years. Christ Jesus in the mountain, our brother, 40 days. And I started thinking about the significance of isolation. I started thinking about, wow, what is it that makes us look at the glass half empty instead of half full? What if I could experience God and everything I do? What if I became very present to all that was around me in this right now moment? I was talking to we were at a reveal party. Pastor Goflavor and Flegger was there. He was the keynote speaker. And he began, this was before technology even got to have advanced smartphones like we do today. It was just regular cell phones. And he started talking about, he opened up his conversation with a basketball team, NBA, and how when they were on the bus and when if they spent time playing video games on the phone and not interacting, how that translated on the floor, on the basketball court. But he also said when they interacted, it translated differently on the basketball court. He showed how when they interacted with each other on the bus, opposed to being on the phone or being distracted by technology, that translated into a better game on the basketball court. Because what happens when you do more interaction, there becomes this unspoken congruency. So when I yin, you yang, I left, you move right, it's like a perfect balance because of the interaction. But when we in our own individual space playing our games and not interacting, that translated into the court as well, and it didn't turn out so well. And he starts talking about the importance of love and how distracted we were becoming because of technology. I don't even think Facebook was popular at the time. Instagram. Out. But maybe it was Adam. Maybe I wasn't as aware. Because we're so caught up in it. And then I start to think. To be present to the gift of the struggle, to be present to the gift of isolation, to be present to the things that help us expand and become more of what we can start to be very present and being in the presence of all that is right now. Not to worry about tomorrow, not to worry about the next minute, but simply embracing the idea that all is life. All is absolutely divine in this right now moment. Even if I don't know how or what, but what if everything was just absolutely divine, even in the struggle? How to really lean into trust. Trust. As we go through life, even the smallest of actions, powerful effect on our days. One single smile can ignite even bigger smiles, and the domino effect of love begins. One single thought can begin a complete transformation. When we project into the universe, will often come right back to us. They say the law of attraction is a powerful tool in life that truly must be understood. When we water our positive affirmations daily, this little seed will grow. Eventually, what we are projecting, we quite possibly can attract. Through life, we will receive the most incredible gift at our divine time. And I can be quite impatient, though. Even in my patience, sometimes I get even tired. It's like, come on, God. But I have to often think. But I had to realize that life's greatest gifts will arrive at the right time. That is meant to happen. Whether this has been through a breakup, a struggle, the moments like many others in my life had occurred for a special reason. We often have to work to get where we need to be, which when as people, even through all the obstacles, we can choose to attract what we radiate. We can choose to attract by what we radiate. I try to wake up each and every day being thankful. I'm thankful. I'm just one grateful somebody. Recognizing that each word carries an energy that will work in creating my day, because how I start my day is how I live my life. How I start my day is how I live my day. See, I learned what we begin to trust within ourselves will help it become a reality. My situations came naturally. I know because of what I was projecting. I truly believe that our thoughts will wake up to contribute to help attracting new relationships, new businesses, whatever. Never be discouraged by others when you voice your vision. Trust in your calling so deeply, and you will surprise yourself with the outcome. Trust the writer. Trust yourself as a speaker. Trust me. Facilitating the love journey, being a dynamic speaker and a writer is the last thing I thought I would end up being. But as time has unraveled, it's the direction that I put me in. I want to remind you today, dream big, you, my family. You dream big. But then dream bigger. And then dream even bigger than the bigger than just dream. And watch how divine timing will bring it all into fruition. Trust the struggle. Dream big and trust the divine timing. Dream big and trust the divine timing. And I love what she talked about in her brother being in preparation even before the audition. Because it's interesting, when I saw the first time I saw the movie 12 Years a Slave, I thought he was a phenomenal actor.
thought he played his role even in what he didn't say. I mean, he was such an elegant and regal man, and to be thrown in slavery, you knew there was something different about how he moved and navigated through life, because he wasn't ever a slave. And even in the way he dressed and moved as a slave, he did never own slavery energy. And I was like, wow, he did a really good job of playing that role. Never knowing that he had practiced. And I thought to myself, wow, he did a very good job of showing what it looks like put into slavery, but yet having this regal air. And no matter how they tried to beat him and beat it out of him, it was just his being. His beingness had an elegance, a regalness that didn't move like a slave. I want to leave you with this thought. Trust yourself. Trust yourself. So many of us don't listen to that inner truth. We have lost connection with our inner God. We're always looking outside ourselves for answers, or avoiding or ignoring what's trying to be heard within. It may be telling us to leave a relationship, leave a job, not to say yes, not to say no. Go to yoga, read a book. For many years, we have been blocked. We've been unwilling to listen. And then we get to the point where we can't tell the difference between our intuition, our small voice, the voice of God, or the other voice of fear. We actually not even aware there could be a difference. We get caught up in old patterns, limiting beliefs and fears that our ego are telling us. The thoughts that could run through our head during the day are not the calm, loving voice within us connected to our heart. These thoughts are our ego, the loud, chattery voice of worry, doubt, blame, and judgment. You see, the universe made it possible for us to listen if we just be still. See, self-trust builds an inner confidence that is matched by nothing else. Self-trust is built. It builds an inner confidence that is matched by nothing else. When we listen to ourselves and trust what comes through, this is a direct line to spirit telling us what to do, and it can see the fastest track to everything we desire. So we will want to listen. You see, we were born highly intuitive and connected to the wisdom within ourselves, but either through our friends, family, society, parents, we've told this secondary to the logical thinking brain and to what everyone else is doing and what we're told to do. Feelings are not important. We're told that feelings are not important. All of those ideas swiftly cut us off from ourselves and disempower us. Many of us can remember being told when we had to eat, when we had to go to sleep, not to be upset when we truly had a reason to be upset. Someone was seriously mean to that day. So we learn at a young age to not to listen to ourselves. We learn at a young age not to decide what we do and how we feel. We have let the outside world determine what we do and how we feel. Who we are, and some of us slowly shut down and then we begin to lash out. You see, cultivating self-trust, cultivating self-love because you're loving yourself enough to listen to yourself. Cultivating self-trust and self-love because you're loving enough to listen. And the amount you have for yourself is different to the amount of love you can give or receive from someone else. Come on now, let me say that again. I know you and the amount of love you have is directly proportionate to love, the baseline of building a relationship with yourself and others. I'm going to say this again because I know you didn't get it. The amount of love you have for yourself is directly proportionate to the amount of love you can either give or receive from someone else. Because this is the baseline of building a relationship with yourself and others. What am I saying? I'm saying the capacity you have to give, the capacity you have to receive love. If you're giving special, baby. You're going to get love back from an empty space. Come on, Holy Spirit. Oh, that's some good stuff. And you wonder why you don't feel fulfilled in your love and energy. Come on, God. You got to start by identifying that ego's voice are not in with your levels of discernment heightening. You know what is happening with that's not this way. Quick talk serving you. Something does not resonate with you. Spend more time person doing activity. You have to let go of all life choices, but when it is a strong, clear message to the universe that we're ready for something more. The more we trust ourselves and make choices from our higher self and not from the fearful energy, we break all codependent patterns. We start to spend time with people and do activities that are aligned with our truth. We are growing on a soul level, and subsequently our whole life expands from mediocrity to the miraculous. Let me say that again. The more we begin to trust ourselves, the more we make choices from the higher self and not the fearful ego, we break all codependent patterns that, and spend time with people and do activities that are aligned with our truth. We are growing on a soul level, and subsequently our whole life expands from mediocrity to the miraculous. When we trust ourselves and make choices that are best for us, we no longer betraying ourselves, but instead honoring who we really are, and there's no greater freedom. There is no greater freedom. Trust yourself today. Release the fear of being judged. Let go of the doubt that might get in the way. And practice self-trust. Trust yourself to make choices from your higher self. Trust your inner guide. Trust your inner spirit. This way you can quickly walk away from things that are no longer serving you, things that are not resonating with you. You can spend more time with people and doing activities that you love. We might have to let go of some old relationship or lifestyle choices, but when we do this, we send a strong, clear message to the universe that we are Holy Spirit, that we are ready for something bigger, better, and amazing. Come on, family. Life is about living deliciously, juicy, and amazing life. It's about living that delish life. I call it living in your sweet spot. And we can only do that by trusting the gift that we've been given to live from the inner process. Trust in your gift of the voice that is trying to direct you, guide you, and lead you. And see, when we get so disconnected from self, when we don't know who we are, it's hard to trust in you. It's hard to trust in this powerful presence. Some people say, why we got to hit rock bottom before we can? Because sometimes rock bottom is the only place you can hear. When you're sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired, then you hit rock bottom, and then that's what you want to hear. You will be still then. Time to listen. What is the struggle here to teach you? What is the pain trying to show you? And pain is an acronym for what? Pay attention inward now. What is the discomfort or dis-ease that is in your body coming to express to you right now? That's why I love power, empowerment. Not this, not why is this happening to me? Not why, but what is the divine coming to express? What is the gift of kidney failure? What is the gift of cancer? What is the gift of this big blow up that's got me so heartbroken right now? What is the gift of whatever's happening in my life right now? What is the divine wanting to express through me? And what must I become in order to express the person in my greatest and highest best self? What must I become? Now, that's a really, because once we see the person who we like to be, the life we want to live, healthy, free, amazing, in a love relationship, how do I become that person? Person you envision in your imagination of being. What must I do to express life in this manner right now? Who must I become to meet the greater version of myself? I love that. Who must I become to meet the greater version of myself? Who must I become to meet the greater version of myself? This is some good stuff. Thank you, Holy Spirit. Who must I become to meet the greater version of myself? And so as you move through your day and begin to trust that the process is divine, trust that the process is divine. But I don't have to repeat this again, God. So what is the lesson for me to take from, extrapolate from this blessing that you've brought, that I've created basically in my life? How can I extrapolate the blessing in this lesson? Level up. Like Sierra said, got to level up and take the lesson, turn it in and make it and see it as a blessing and turn it into money. That's what she said. Yummy, yummy, yummy. Yummy, yummy, yummy. Let's level up, family. Some of y'all are like, who is Sierra and what is she talking about, right? In essence, what I'm saying is take the lesson, turn it into a blessing. And most times, our pain is where our profit is. You see, somebody right now is praying for your magnificence. Somebody is praying for you to see your magnificence so you can step in your light and you can give them permission to step. Somebody is praying that the lesson you give is the story you, they can hear the story so they can take the lessons out of your blessings and become the blessed energy that they need to be on this planet. Somebody is waiting right now on your greatness. You see, nothing can comes to kill us. Not even cancer comes to kill you. You see, so many times as soon as people hear the word cancer, they give themselves a death sentence. As soon as they hear the word AIDS, they give themselves a death sentence. But I come to tell you that nothing comes to kill us. But the reason it kills us is because we get stuck on stuck street, baby. And then we move in, why did this happen to me, Boulevard? And we never move out of those energies. Well, what if you can stare cancer in his face today and say, why are you here? What did you come to teach me? And out of this teaching, what can I share with the world to be the medicine and the bomb that somebody might need to hear? What if the heartbreak that you're feeling right now was breaking you open to a better person, to your highest and best good, so that somebody who's following in your footsteps right now, you can turn around and say, baby, I've been there, and this is what you need to do. What if you can write a letter to your heartbreak right now, stare pain in his face, and say, I'm not scared of you. I come to hear what you got to say. What if you can look at the struggle and say, what is the blessing in this struggle right now? Why is it that the money not showing up? What is the blessing in this process that I am experiencing in this right now moment? What if you can look it in his face and ask, what is it that the divine is wanting to express to me in this blessing right now? What I want you to really think about as you write in your journals today, what is your specific situation that, and what is it that this came to teach you today? What is it that the divine to know and express so that you can release whatever it is that's going through? If it's the process, if it's the this dysfunction or dis-ease in the body or disharmony in a relationship? What is it that it came to teach you? I remember the one time when I had a disharmony with someone I truly did love and adore, and I couldn't understand why her and I was in this disharmony. And I remember asking, Holy Spirit, what is it that the divine came to teach me in this life? And I'm going to tell you, it was the best thing that ever happened to me when I really got the lesson. And you know what my lesson was? I didn't have to show up perfect. I didn't have to be perfect. Because who going to love you, going to love you anyway. You see, when someone loves you, there's nothing you can do to stop them from loving you. And when they don't love you, there's nothing you can do to make them love you. And I learned that I didn't have to be perfect. I just needed to show up. And I had to ask my friends to stop putting me on pedestals. Because somehow I had created an energy where I was on all these people's pedestals. And I was falling off and I didn't want to be there. But that was because in some way there was an idea that I had to be perfect. And it showed up differently than what someone expected. I beat myself up. I beat myself up in my mind. I would go, oh, well, why did you do this? Now I don't do that to myself. Okay, you mean you lost a few cool points, you fell off, and you made a mistake. And I laugh with myself and love myself through it. Laughter is the best medicine. I laughed my way through it. Girl, I don't know why you did that, but hey, we're going to keep on moving, and we're going to love you through this situation. Trust your small voice. Trust in itself. Trust the gift that you've been given to lead you and guide you into the greater version of yourself. And ask yourself, who must I become to meet the greater version of myself? Who must I become? Who must I become? Not anymore. We don't want to know why. Why am I here, God? Oh, why, God? No, that's disempowering. And you're a God, you're a goddess, you're a master, you're an alchemist, you're magical. You're so cold that you can turn fool's gold into real gold. Isn't that what happened in the alchemist book? You're such a queen, you can turn a frog into a king, baby. But we got to first know thyself. Know thyself. We must master ourselves. And that's the real goal. That's the real reason for the season of your life, is to master yourself, to fall so deeply into a love affair with oneself, to be authentically you, to show up in your authenticity, and not be afraid of your vulnerability, not be afraid of the dark parts of you, not be afraid of the things that may be exposed. You see, I had to learn to love the dark parts of me because you know, you get caught up in this light work and all this woo-woo-woo stuff, and you think it's important to always be a certain way. The only thing that's important to be is fluid. Fluid. If you feel like you're in a dark space, honor the darkness. Did you know the light was birthed from the darkness? Everything that exists exists from the darkness. What if we could start to see fear and darkness in a different way? What if we saw it as our friend and not our foe? And sit with it and begin to trust in the unknown process. I remember laying in the bed, God, I don't really understand what it means to have faith. What does it really mean to have faith, God, when you can't even see the steps in front of you, when you don't even know what way to go? And Spirit said to me, this is the best definition I've ever heard of faith. Trust in the process of the unknown. Trusting in the process of the unknown. Spirit dropped that in my soul. I was like, ooh. Trusting in the process of the unknown. Trust. your inner self. We got to sit with our inner self. We got to become our own best friends. We got to know that we have the power to heal and to transform everything in our life. Baby, you're so cold, you can turn fool's gold into real gold. I'm telling you. 24 carats. That's how powerful you are. You're so powerful, you can turn water into wine. But just like everything in life, in order to become the truth of who you are, you got to remove those veils and practice. Practice turning your water into wine. Practice turning your fool's gold into gold. You have the power to heal and to transform your life. You got the power to transform disharmony relationships. You got the power to transform the ill that's been called forth in your body to bring forth a message to you today. The healing balm for all things, I promise you. Love that cancer. Love that struggle. Love the process and say, I love you enough to know what's going on so I can move myself out of this situation. You have that power. And that's my message. Let me see. Woo, we 7:20. Any questions, comments, concerns? I just wanted to let you know tomorrow is Rochelle Knox Memorial Service, Muster, Indiana, Family Christian Center Church. The love journey will be Claudette Reddick is collecting all the money. I've been sending people to Claudette Reddick. For anybody who wants to donate $5, $10, $15, $20, we're going to take to the church or be delivered to the church or however. And so Claudette Reddick is having the beautiful roses, the bouquet she's handling in the process to take, because that was one thing Miss Mama Rochelle loved, is some beautiful flowers. And I just want to take time to thank Claudette Reddick for even taking this on and having the mind to say, let's do something of this magnitude from the love journey. And so I just want to thank Claudette Reddick for being such an amazing gift to the love journey. Always holding space, always willing to volunteer, always ready to make sure we're taking this thing to the next level, evolving and growing and just being a great supporter, member, love energy of the love journey. I love you, Claudette Reddick, and I hope that life is being the same energy that you are to so many people. As we send love out to Philip Jackson. Philip Jackson is founder and the CEO of Black Star Project, a program that reminds our young black children that they are black stars. He teaches them chess. He taught them, you know, he brings people in to teach them chess and how to translate chess into the real world, reinforcing math science, and other things to help them to improve in their school habits. He also took them on trips to different places to explore life other than the street they live on. And he had the Black Star Project is a really phenomenal project to bring in fathers to help walk our kids to school, to be a part of the education process, to be a part of their life. We had a parenting program. It's just so many things. So today, I just want to send love into Philip Jackson right now. He's been in a hospital for 40 days. And Claudette went to see him yesterday. That's another program that Claudette volunteers and give her time to. And so as we send love into Philip Jackson, recognizing his perfection, his wholeness, and his complete, but being in total gratitude for the gift of so many people's lives that he touched. I met him when he used to be the CEO temporarily for CHA, Chicago Housing Authority. He was one of the few CEOs I ever seen who didn't use a driver, who came communities. Just you wouldn't even know he was the CEO because most of the CEOs had a bodyguards and but he came in his regular car and came to the gym and watched as if he was just, you know, But he wanted to reach out and touch the people, and he wanted to see at his level what could he do to make a difference on the front line, for the front line people. You see, a lot of times as a leader, sometimes we have to make choices that sometimes other people don't understand. You know, when you're the one who had to make the decisions on how bills are going to be paid, when you're the one who had to make a decision on how everything has to move, and you don't know a lot of times where it's coming, sometimes you make decisions that not the other people don't understand or don't like. Think they might think that you a traitor, or they might think that you whatever. But sometimes in order to put fund these programs, because we haven't come together in our own programs, sometimes you have to be dictated by the other sources that come in to bring you the money. And sometimes you have to abide by those rules. And sometimes people don't always understand that when you get money from a government source or other sources, you got to follow by their rules. We can only play by our rules when we can play by our money. Money is the financial significance that we need to have in order to play by our own rules. And sometimes all you care about is the work. So you do whatever it has to do to get the work done. Meaning, if I want to continue to have this chest, I got to fund it. Just want to give a lot of love and a shout out to someone I admired for years, watching him do some amazing things, Philip Jackson family. I want you to hold him in the light today. Continue to hold him in love and light. Because he is an amazing gift to the planet. And I think today makes his 41st day in the hospital. He spent more days in the hospital this year than out. They say he's lost a lot of weight. And I really don't think that he will be around too much longer. Same thing like Aretha Franklin. So family, let's just hold the love and the light for all these beautiful people who are living the planet. That's more importantly, life is a legacy that when we leave the planet, our great-grandchildren will know our name. Our great-grandchildren will know our name. That's one. If you're on the Blog Talk, press 1, star 6 if you're on teleconference. All right, family, I want to remind you today, again, if you are interested in making any donations for the Flowers for the Love Journey, make sure you give Claudette a call, 312-437-1411. I should have asked if it was okay to give her number out. I apologize if it's not, Claudette, but most people have your number on the line. Claudette Reddick is handling the bouquet. All right, family, I just want to remind you that your life is a gift from God. And what you do with your life is to give back to God. Remember to choose love. Love is the only choice. And remember, family, don't just dream. Don't just dream. Don't just dream. Level up. But let's live our God-sized dreams. Come on, family. It's time to live our God-sized dreams. I'm going to play Jill Scott, Dreaming. You've been tuned in to the Love Journey. Oh, dear, I see somebody want to come in. Claudette, was you trying to come in? I cut the music off. Live a left dream. Follow the dream. Beautiful dreamer. Good morning, Claudette.
Hey, you got to let Gio continue, girl, because you still ain't singing yet. But it's fine for everybody to call me. 312-437-1411. You can go Claudette Reddick at PayPal, CLAUDETTE, and my last name Reddick, REDIC, at PayPal, or you can do Cider Enterprises at PayPal. I will make certain that we have the most beautiful bouquet of flowers for Rochelle, our star, our queen. And thank you for any contributions you wish to make. Thank you, Janine.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Nikki said she would be sending you a PayPal. Or she didn't say PayPal, she would be sending you a donation. She said, Wheatley, thank you, Nicole. Wheatley, sending you lots of love, honey.
Good morning. Do you have the Cash App, Greta?
Yes, I do.
The reason why, if you go PayPal, it's going to take 4 to 5 days to get your money. If you go Cash App, it's going to take instantly.
I have a Cash App, too. I think I'm Claudette Reddick on there, or Cider Enterprises.
So let me suggest Cash App as opposed to PayPal. So then the money will be there within a minute.
Well, you know, I'm going to take care of it, so everything will be done in good order. But you can use the Cash App.
So I appreciate that. Just an FYI.
Okay. Thank you, Rosa.
All right. Thank you, Rosa. Thank you, Rosa J. All right. I just want to leave you in the words of Deepak and Oprah. Wherever I am, peace is. Wherever I am, I create peace. I love that. And I am the universe. I hope that if you haven't listened to those, at least those last two. Number five is gone. That was my first love. Worthiness is my birthright. Check out Miss Rosa J's page and look at her. She went through all the 21 days and the bonus too. So if you haven't had a chance to get through and you want to listen, re-listen, she has it on her page, Levitate Till You Meditate Till You Levitate. That was Rosa J. That was Claudette Reddick of Cider Enterprises. You want to make sure you check out her page too. And make sure you go to the Love Journey page today and love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. I want to send lots of love out to you today and reminding you that love is the answer to all things. My grandmother said it best. There's not an ill love can't heal. There's not a prescription love can't fill. And for every question, love is the answer. This is Jill Scott. You've been tuned in to the Love Journey family. Your love journey experience with Janine and Ingram. I am your daily love, and this is Dreaming Jill Scott right here on WLOV. Have a good day, family. Singer.